Hello and welcome to the Mijlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mijlis and author of the Central Asia in Focus newsletter. The Caspian Sea is a unique body of water. Millions of years ago, an ocean covered large areas of what are now parts of Europe and Asia. When this ocean receded, the Caspian Sea was left, a body of water containing many types of marine life that are not found anywhere else in the world. Caspian Basin area is also rich in oil and natural gas, and the development of these resources is expanding and threatening the sea and everything that lives in and around it. To discuss the complicated issues surrounding the Caspian Sea, I am joined by Vadim Ni, a lawyer, environmental activist, and founder of the Save the Caspian Sea movement, and Tatiana Sedova, an expert on extractive industries governance, civic participation, and capacity building, who has worked with organizations such as Publish What You Pay, the World Bank, and the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative. Thank you both for joining me. Vadim, I'd like to start with you. Can you please give us kind of an overview of the challenges that are facing the Caspian Sea right at the moment?
Hello, Bruce. Thank you for having me for this podcast. The Caspian Sea is clearly currently in crisis and faces serious problems. The biggest one is that its water levels are dropping extremely fast. Kazakhstan's part of the sea is the shallowest and most vulnerable to, so we are most affected by also by oil pollution and declining biodiversity. The drop of the Caspian Sea, it's reached almost 2 meters for 20 years. And it's currently at critical level of minus 29 meters, according to the Baltic system. And by the end of the century, according to some studies, it could shrink by another 9 to 18 meters. And in 30 years, it could be up to 4-5 meters. In addition to this, the population of sturgeons and endemic Caspian seals have declined by over 90%. So we almost lost the sturgeon fishery on the Caspian Sea, because every year the governments of the Caspian countries are setting the moratorium, prolonging the moratorium on the fishing sturgeons. And we also see almost every year the massive deaths of the Caspian seals. The corpse, people are finding the corpse of Caspian seals, birds, and they are very worrying about the situation with the Caspian Sea and its pollution by oil companies and other industrial companies. Of course, some pollution is coming by rivers, including Volga River and Ural River. That is more or less the summary of what's going on with the Caspian Sea. But still, there are plans to expand the oil operations, including on the Tengiz oil field. Also, there are some plans on dredging works due to the declining level of the sea in the Aktau and Bautina seaports to enable for transportation, because currently they are facing some challenges to increase the transportation on the Caspian Sea. And then it could be followed by the another dredging works on the sea, because there is a shallow part between the northern and the central part of the sea. That's, of course, will add to the pollution of the Caspian Sea. It will disturb the population of the Caspian seal, sturgeon fishes, and it will continue, that's at least for 3 years.
This is not the first type of this kind of environmental crisis in Central Asia. For the benefit of our listeners, could you just give us a couple of comments on what happened to the Aral Sea? Because a lot of people are comparing what's happening to the Caspian to what happened to the Aral Sea already.
Yeah, it's well known, the situation, the tragedy of the Aral Sea. The most worrying time were in 1990s, when no fish were able to survive in the Aral Sea. Now, at least a part of the Aral Sea, with the so-called small Aral Sea, was saved after the construction of a dam. And up to 27 species are already are available to survive. Fishery is more or less sustainable at the moment in the Kazakhstan's part of the Aral Sea. So I can compare to the station of the 90s. They were desperate how to live farther in that region. Now it's more or less better in the small part of the Aral Sea. Of course, the situation with Caspian Sea is comparable. The sea is much bigger, so it can be fragmented, not totally lost, even if we will face the worst case scenarios. But still, it could be fragmented, and the north part of the Caspian Sea could be lost because it's the shallowest one. We already see that decline of the fishery in the northern part of the Caspian Sea. It's not even about the sturgeon fishery, which is prohibited. But the other species is also not available for fishing. I just in December was in Atarau. I saw the empty ships after the return from the sea to the river. And that's clear evidence that of the loss of the fishery, at least in some parts of the Caspian Sea.
Okay, thank you. I know that you're a legal expert. So can you tell me, what are the laws about environmental protection? Is there anything, any rules, regulations that are supposed to be followed to prevent or at least slow down the process of environmental damage to the Caspian Sea?
That was a protected area was actually from the Soviet time in the northern part of the Caspian Sea. Then the situation with that protected area was unclear. There were some exemptions for some work to enable oil industry development in that part of the Caspian Sea. And now there is, just recently I checked the legislative database because the government should set the boundaries of that protected area. I didn't find any resolution by the government on the boundaries of that protected area and checked with partners. And they said, no, we didn't find this document too. So it looks like the protected regime of the northern part of the Caspian Sea is not in place at the moment. You can see the law, but it's not implemented at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Tatiana, since it says you do extractive industries governance, can you speak a little bit about what role that plays in the situation in the Caspian, for instance?
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. Thank you also for inviting me and having me for this very important for our region topic. I actually wanted to add on what Vadim mentioned about Aral Sea, that actually the tragedy of Aral Sea was mainly, Vadim, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was mainly due to the use of the rivers, incoming rivers, mainly for irrigation, right? For cotton production. While, for example, Caspian Sea, for this situation, for the drop of the water level, etc., the oil production, which is extensively going on Caspian Sea, full out since the active development started in 1997, in 2000. So for 25, 30 years, this is the oil development and oil production which affects the situation, the ecological situation in the Caspian Sea. And this is what EHI is working on. This initiative This is an extractive industry transparency initiative, so it focuses on disclosing data from companies on one end and from the government on the other end, right? EHI is mainly about financial data. It's about tax and non-tax payments, but also there is an EHI standard which contains several requirements, including also requirements on ecological and social payments made by extractive companies to the national and subnational budget. Basically, what they disclose is ecological payments and fees, which they face year by year, right? So on ATI, you can find information disclosed by companies, by the revenue streams or by the payments. Different taxes, different payments, which companies made to the budget, right? So EHI, for the initiatives like Save the Caspian, the very good source of information and very good support, because this is a global initiative, 55 countries are the members, including Kazakhstan, and also extractive companies supporting EHI. They also have their own obligations. So using EHI, actually, our colleagues from ecological movements, like Vadim, like Save the Caspian, we can together actually make companies or try to make companies more accountable, including on ecological damages and their social interventions in the regions of operations. I will stop now because I can speak about EHI for ages. But maybe next questions will make it more focused.
One thing I want to ask is, you said Kazakhstan's a member of this EITI, but there's five countries on the Caspian Sea. Are all five of those countries, Iran, Azerbaijan, Russia, Kazakhstan, and Turkmenistan, are all of them?
No, only Kazakhstan is an EITI member. Azerbaijan used to be, but they left EHI several years ago due to actually civil society participation in the initiative due to, you know, some restrictions towards civil society. And that was one of the reasons why Azerbaijan actually left EHI. So yeah, for those five countries, only Kazakhstan is a member.
Okay, if I could follow up just with one more question. You said that it's also the responsibility of the companies that are working there. Now there's, even in the case of Kazakhstan, there are Russian companies that are involved in the oil business, in oil extraction in Kazakhstan too. How does that work? So it's kind of like the Caspian Pipeline Consortium, for example, right? Russia's in that. How does the company report on this then? If there's involvement with Russia, is it the same? Is it because Exxon is in and Chevron is involved in Kazakhstan? What obligation does the company, do these companies have to report to you?
Yeah, as I said, companies supporting EHI on global level, and that will include also Exxon and Eni and Total and Shell. So the big players involved in three big Caspian, pre-Caspian projects, oil gas projects in Kazakhstan, right? And since Kazakhstan became an EHI member, in 2007, we became a candidate country and then the member of the initiative. Actually, every company operating in Kazakhstan is supposed to report on EHI. And this is stipulated in the subsoil use code. So when country is joining the initiative, then it's not up to the company whether they report or not. So they should report. They are obliged by the subsoil use code to report on EHI. Unfortunately, in practice, it's not always like that. If we speak about big consortiums working around Caspian Sea, like TCO, Tengizchev Oil, right, Karachaganak Petroleum Operating and the North Caspian Operating Company, Kashagan, we can see that, for example, KPO and TCO, they do report on the EHI, the operators, right, while NCOC does not. And despite of several appeals from also civil society within EHI towards NCOC, they still don't report. And that's what we actually need to also focus on, is that, you know, it's good to have international initiatives, but when it comes to actually practical implementation, they might be serious issues. So on the local level, for example, NCOC does not report on EHI. On the global level, for example, we have almost all American and European companies as supporting companies. But for example, Chevron, they left the EHI in 2023. So when it comes to not only to Russian companies, which you mentioned, but in that case, at least the country is not an EHI member. And the U.S. is also not an EHI member. So even supporting companies on the global level, unfortunately, not that active supporter when it comes to the project level, to the actual work in the country. So there are a lot of issues, but still my point is that EHI needs, constant push and monitoring from civil society and from the government. It needs a political will. But if properly implemented, it could be a great source of information for informed decision making for such cases like Vadim is raising.
Okay, great. Thank you. And we're going to get back to this in a minute, but I want to also go to the relations between the littoral states. So Vadim, I'm going to come back to you. Now, one example, Turkmenistan, for a long time, they've been talking about doing a Trans-Caspian natural gas pipeline. Iran and Russia have objected to that. And it's worth mentioning at this point, since you brought up sturgeon, that of course, caviar comes from sturgeon. Iranian and Russian caviar is worth more than gold, literally worth more than gold on the market. And Russia and Iran have voiced objections to the construction of this pipeline from Turkmenistan to Azerbaijan, saying that it could do environmental harm to the Caspian Sea. And yet, have you seen in practice that Iran and Russia have raised any environmental concerns about what's happening in the Caspian? I know your work in Kazakhstan, but have you seen, are there Russian organizations, are there Azerbaijani organizations, are there Iranian organizations that are bringing up the same kind of issues as Save the Caspian Sea, your organization?
I think that's at the moment, and at the country level, the Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan taking the lead on the idea to try to raise the environmental concerns on the Caspian Sea. We didn't hear such voices from Russia because the current very complicated situation. In the past, there were active colleagues from Russia. They did even the rating of the openness of oil companies from Russia, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, some of them working on the Caspian Sea. That was based on some request for information, the study of what is available on the other companies. And the highest rating was on the Russian companies, then Kazakhstan, then Azerbaijan. I don't know what to what extent I can, that's the data are credible, but at least the rating is available. Some of the operators, like Karachaganak, they've also included into their rating, and they, Tengiz Chevroil, dealing with two of three majors, all three were covered, actually, North Caspian Operating Company too. Karachaganak was rated the highest in 2021, even though we know the situation, what happened 10 years ago on Karachaganak. It was in the Berezovka village when 27 children suffered of emissions from that oil field. They are hospitalized and then they were suffering from consequences of that impact of their toxic intoxication for a long period of time. So we know that in principle, it depends, let's say, how big is company. Sometimes for bigger companies, it's less to be more open to publish reports, to make sustainability reporting. But in principle, they are also operating more bigger oil fields. That's why they should be, let's say, to some extent, we can say more accountable. That's more or less situation, not very clear. The main concern with the operator of three, a large oil field in Kazakhstan, that's the agreements themselves kept as confidential information from the time of their signing. Because normally the oil companies and other extractive industries, they sign at the moment the so-called sample agreements with some maybe individual provisions, which should be substantiated. But in case of three companies, we have no access at all to the agreements on the three major oil fields in Kazakhstan.
Okay, thank you. And a reminder that we're talking about the increasingly dire ecological situation in the Caspian Sea. And my guests are Tatiana Sedova, an expert on extractive industries governance, civic participation, and capacity building, who has worked with organizations such as the World Bank and Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, EITI, and Vadim Nee, a lawyer, environmental activist, and founder of the Save the Caspian Sea movement. Tatiana, I want to come back to you for this. Let's focus a little bit on Kazakhstan, since it seems like we have much more information about what's happening, and even among the government, when groups like EITI, when they're looking for someone to engage with in Kazakhstan. You mentioned that the government organizations and civic organizations, or who are these government organizations, bodies, and who are those civic organizations? And we assume that Vadim's is one.
Yeah, actually, it works on the same principle on the global level and on every country level, right? So also in Kazakhstan, the initiative is overseen by the multi-stakeholder group. And this multi-stakeholder group consists of representatives of three main stakeholders, right? The first one is the government. Another one is extractive companies. And the third one is the civil society. In the case of Kazakhstan, we also have members of the Majlis Parliament in our multi-stakeholder group, which is called National Stakeholder Council. Coming to specifics from the government, actually, these are the ministries which involved in extractive industries and collecting revenues. So these are basically the Ministry of Energy, which is covering oil and gas sector in Kazakhstan, the Ministry of Industry and Construction, which is covering mining sector, because EITI covers not only oil and gas, but also mining sector. So this is the Ministry of Finance, obviously responsible for tax collection with the tax committee, and the Ministry of Ecology. So these are the main representatives at the National Stakeholder Council from the government side. We also have two big companies associations representing extractive companies, which is Kazenergy for oil and gas, and Association of Mining and Metallurgical Enterprises for Mining. And from civil society organizations, we have six representatives, including myself, and such organizations like, for example, NGO ECHO, Civic Alliance of Kazakhstan. So these are, you know, every constituency, every stakeholder actually responsible for electing their representatives in the MSG, multi-stakeholder group. And also I want to know that the decision is made by consensus, not by voting, by consensus only. So we are aiming at agreeing on every aspect of EITI implementation in the country rather than one constituency can push another. So the same way it works on the global level. Yeah, that's on your question. But I also wanted to add on what Vadim mentioned about disclosure of the contracts of these three big projects in Kazakhstan. Because this is also one of the EITI requirements to disclose the text of the contract in extractive sector. And that became an EITI requirement in 2019. And every contract which was signed or amended after the 1st of January 2021 should be publicly disclosed. And it means the full text with, you know, the work program, with the every amendment, addendums, etc. Unfortunately, and this is what Vadim pointed out, for these three big oil fields, we have so-called production sharing agreements, which were signed back in 90s. And production sharing agreements contain confidentiality clauses. And obviously, they were signed before 2021, right? So my point this was that, you know, the citizens paid a lot of attention to this production sharing agreement because they are the biggest taxpayers. Everybody's talking about them. Everybody knows that the oil from and gas from the fields are exported. So the point is that it was very important to know what actually Kazakhstan is getting from this three huge project, and that this was, put it this way, fair for our country, right? And it would relate not only to fair taxation, but obviously to ecological and social obligations which these companies have in front of Kazakhstan, right? And unfortunately, not only ecological organizations, but we at AETI and quite some members of our parliament, they made several appeals to the ministries and to these companies, asking them to disclose these three contracts. Unfortunately, as of now, we didn't succeed. So the response usually go that the contracts contain confidentiality clauses that they were signed back in the 90s. Even, our President Tokayev mentioned in one of his speeches that these contracts were signed back then, when maybe Kazakhstan was not that experienced in working with foreign investors. But actually, these contracts will be ending soon. So it's 2033 and 2038 for these three contracts. And then there will be new contracts, or maybe not. At least there are negotiations currently going on or starting. Unfortunately, there are not that much information around these negotiations or potential, prolongations. But my point is, if the contracts will be prolonged, in accordance to EATI, the new contract will have to be disclosed. And then we will have an access. That's what we hope for, and that's what we expect.
Okay, thank you. Vadim, you want to pick that up too? I mean, what do you do with, is there any way to pressure the government into revealing some of this? I know that you've been in contact with officials. Do you have any legal problems getting any information on these contracts?
Yeah, actually, we are submitting various requests to the government, to different ministries for different kind of information. And one of them, it's at the beginning of this year, I submitted a request to the Ministry of Energy asking for public access to production sharing agreements. It's for the Karachaganak and Kashagan oil fields. And on Tengiz, it's oil field, it's a concession agreement, which was signed in 1993. And as Tatiana told, that the agreements are kept as confidential information. And they are defined the terms under which oil extractors have been operating in the Caspian region on the Tengiz oil field from the first part of 1990s and on two other oil fields from the second part of the 1990s. But still, we didn't get the information from the Ministry of Energy. They mentioned in their response to my request that they provided the guarantees to the oil companies that this information will be kept as confidential. Not only part of the agreements, but all the agreements are kept as confidential information. So in mid-February of this year, I filed a lawsuit against the Ministry of Energy, not the companies, because for companies, it will be too risky for me to sue them directly. And I called for the disclosure of this critical information. Preliminary agreement hearings on this lawsuit were held 2 days ago. And surprisingly for me, the court made the ruling even at the preliminary stage, which is normally just a formal stage to confirm that's who is suing to whom and whether they have in front of the court the right persons with letter of attorneys. But actually the court made ruling that the case is inadmissible and that I have no standing to sue the Ministry of Energy for the denial of access to environmental information, even though it's the most popular case for Kazakhstan, with the different organizations are suing the government for the denial of access to information. So the grounds for the ruling were manifestly unreasonable and unlawful, and I'm going to appeal the ruling. And because it's violating the confidentiality of information, violating not just my their rights of the public under the national law, the environmental code, but also under the Convention on Access to Information, Public Participation in Decision-Making, and Access to Justice in Environmental Matters, the Aarhus Convention. And there is a article, detailed Article 4, that ensures access to environmental information upon request submitted to public authorities. And there is also Article 9, Paragraph 1 of the Convention that sets standards for access to justice in relation to such cases. So that my rights are guaranteed both under the national and international law. And even the Constitution, the current provisions of Article 6, Paragraph 3, that's what is there, is the land, flora, fauna, and any natural resources belong to the citizens. So we should be aware how the government manage the resources that belong to the citizens. And despite of all of these guarantees in the law, that's the court made the ruling. That's my request is not serious. That's the answer by the Ministry of Information. The Ministry of Energy was just an information, not an administrative act. So I'm going to appeal the ruling. Maybe after I will get the document from the court in writing.
Okay, thank you. We're getting close to the end of the show, but there's one question I have for both of you. But first, let me start. There's a separate question I have for you, Vadim. A couple years ago, the government in Kazakhstan, after mass die-offs of seals and birds, said they were going to set up a special institute to study the Caspian ecological situation. What's happening with that commission?
The institute formally was established. It was registered as a legal person, and the director was appointed. But according to the information I got a month ago, they had no funding from the state budget. So it's not operational yet. No staff was hired for the activities of the institute. It's like this. I don't think that's anything. The situation has been changed significantly for the last months.
Okay, thank you. And here's my last question. Although it's also an opportunity for either one of you to mention something that you think I have not addressed here. But okay, it's understandable that all these countries see that they have oil and gas wealth there and they want to develop it. This is a major source of revenue for every country in the Caspian. And on the other hand, we see the damage the environmental damage that it's doing. So the environmentalists would say the ultimate solution would be to stop gas and oil production entirely. And the gas and oil people and the governments that are looking for revenues would say the ultimate solution is to forget about the environment and just develop all the gas and oil and sell it off. Where is the common ground, an area of cooperation? What would an ideal situation look like where you can still export your oil and gas and at the same time pay sufficient attention and respect the environment so that you don't do damage to it? And I'll start with you, Tatiana.
Yeah, and this is actually also refers to previous Vadim's point on his oath use and refusal of the government. I will start from this, but then I will quickly come back to your question. So Vadim actually described the situation with your use, which is not surprising to me. Because when it comes to the contract disclosure, it's like a ping pong because the government usually says that they cannot disclose the contract unilaterally and they need an agreement and the confidentiality waiver from the companies. The companies also say the same thing that they need it from the government. When it comes to big consortiums, some members of the consortium, at least being a supportive companies, they say on a global level that they are supporting for the contract disclosure. But we never know actually who is, we don't know the exact and clear position of every player. of these big consortiums and big oil and gas businesses. So my point is that, of course, what you said is correct, that we need to find the balance. We need to get maximum from what we were blessed with our natural resources, right? So I believe it's not realistic that the oil production should stop now. Because Kazakhstan has actually declared carbon neutrality by 2060. And we are moving in this direction. But it doesn't mean that the oil production should stop, as I said. But my point is that it should be green production with the use of the best, for example, carbon capture technologies and things like that. And of course, unfortunately, there will still be some ecological damages, but the more transparent and accountable both companies and the governments will be on this oil production processes, the more they communicate with people which live there and generally to the citizens of Kazakhstan, the more profitable, not only from money point of view, but from the more beneficial it will be for us, for the citizens. That is my point. So yeah, we will still be extracting, but whether we do it really in the right way, with proper safeguards, with proper ecological measures, ecological protection measures, with proper social safeguards, et cetera, the more accountable this process will be and more beneficial. And that's again due to transparency and communication between companies and the government and citizens.
Thank you very much. Vadim, you know, the same question to you. To use Tatiana's word, what does a balance look like in this equation?
I think that's the common ground in any case would be realistically that further continuation of the whole operation, but based on the increased accountability by the government and the oil companies. And what we are claiming for is the transparency of the situation between two parties pointing to each other, while we do not see that the local communities are benefiting from the oil operations on the Caspian Sea. And we see further expansion of the activities on the Tengiz oil field. Just recently, the Tengiz Chevroil announced the future growth project on the Tengiz oil field. And they're planning to increase the production for up to 260,000 barrels daily. And it's the agreement on the Tengiz oil field will expire before the other two. It's, if I don't mistake, it's 2003 or 2033 or 2034. The other two in 2038. It's not realistic to expect they will stop the activities before the agreements will expire. But at least the time is to request them to contribute to the environment, both sides. And the oil companies, local communities needs and environmental needs. That's why we're also asking, not just suing for access to information, but also asking what has been paid by companies, three companies, but also other companies operating on the Caspian Sea, to the budget as environmental payments or taxes, just to have the reasonable grounds to evaluate if it's fair or unfair. That's we are trying to reach on this campaign. There was recently discussion in the parliament. What is it fair or unfair? We said the head of CEO of the Tengiz Chevroil, and he mentioned if the agreement was signed, it means it's fair. But nobody knows what in that agreement.
You know, I suppose this is a good time to mention that the Kazakh government is actually suing some of the oil companies. They want 100, $60 billion or something like that. So, you know, if the contract is fair, then it raises a lot of questions about what these legal cases are all about. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I do want to thank you both. Thank you, Vadim.
Thank you
for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Emmy Karoli, our Medjlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Medjlis podcast or the Central Asian Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfurl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back soon.